Well, it was a day low on data and low on moves, but don't turn off because there was some excitement from the Bank of Canada. A fairly outspoken member of the bank. We'll look at what she had to say. The data from the United States has been largely on the soft side, but there has been a pickup in new orders. And today, Australia's inflation. What do we expect? NAB has a slightly different view to the consensus. We'll look at why that is. And a budget statement from New Zealand today as well. More debt coming their way. It's Wednesday. It's the 27th of March, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, US stocks were up until the final hour of power. Then at the close, they were down. The Nasdaq down 0.4%, in fact. 0.3% lower for the S&P. The Dow just creeping into the red with the Russell 2000 down 0.2%. Gains in Europe, though, but of course Europe closed when it did. The US was still in the green, but 0.4% higher for the Euro stocks. 50, 0.7% for the DAX, and a little under 0.2% up for the FTSE 100. A tiny move up in the US dollar, although it was falling a good chunk of the session. The Aussie is also down 0.1% lower, hovering around 65.3 US cents. In fact, the only major currency showing big moves is the Swiss franc, which is down 0.5% this morning. We've got small moves in bond yields as well. 10-year treasuries down just one basis point at 4.23%, down 2 basis points for 10 years in Germany and the UK. And Aussie 10 years were up 2 basis points yesterday to 4.02%. On futures now, 3 basis points higher than that. And oil is lower, down almost 0.8% for Brent, just above 86 a barrel, and a 0.6% fall for WTI. So a lackluster day across all categories, although a bit of excitement towards the end. Ken Compton always likes a bit of excitement, and he joins us now from NAB in Sydney. So, yeah, I mean, the excitement in equities was the fact that, they were pushing higher. Then they moved lower, and I guess, you know, is how much of this is positioning for the end of the first quarter, and perhaps a little bit of trepidation ahead of the inflation read on Friday.
Yeah, morning, Phil. Certainly a bit of a run-up there again to end the month, or almost to end the month in equities. Obviously, still a couple of trading days to go. Yeah, I am seeing as well as I'm seeing a bit of that being ascribed to sort of potential index rebalancing flows. It's always quite hard to pick out exactly what the case is there. I mean, amidst a broader environment which is clearly relatively bullish for equities, there's clearly some fundamentals behind it as well. I did see some reports, sort of noting the S&P 500 was on track to record a 5 months of straight month-on-month gains for the first time since about 2013 or something in that region. So clearly still a pretty bullish environment out there for risk assets. And I guess, bond market's not pulling against that too much overnight with relatively minor net moves, and Treasury still holding around that sort of 4.25%.
And we've got a new entity on the Dow, Trump Technologies and Media Group, which operates Donald Trump's Truth Social, the Trump Twitter substitute. It's actually a merger with the previously listed Digital World, and its value skyrocketed 21% today with this sort of new listing. But the commentary seems to suggest it's overvalued, strangely. All the more reason for Donald Trump, perhaps, to talk up the share market. Confidence numbers. We had a few of those overnight, didn't we? Including the Conference Board consumer confidence read in the United States. Little changed, that's their words, for March. But they also said brighter perceptions of today's economic conditions eclipsed by rising anxiety about the future. So expectations is now down to 73.8 from 76.3 last month. Now, they say the expectations index reading below 80, and it's quite a bit below that, often signals a forthcoming recession. So perhaps that's just a bit of a reality check, although, you know, they also have people saying, well, they don't expect that anytime soon. But this is one of, you know, several pieces of soft data we've been seeing out of the United States lately, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a fairly broad array of second-tier data out across the US last night. Looking at that consumer confidence print in particular, I mean, if you line that up against what we've seen, you know, you can maybe start to draw a bit of a divergence between sort of the consumer and the small business sector and some of the other sectors of the economy over there. You know, look, we are seeing some of the bigger business sentiment indices like the ISM starting to roll over a tiny bit, but certainly what we saw in the NFIB indices last month was a broader amount of weakening, and we're seeing that here in the consumer confidence figures as well. So once again, probably some sort of maybe cracks around the edges as you would expect as you get into this sort of relatively late part of the cycle. I think the most notable thing in there I've seen called out by some analysts was the strong decline in expectations in that conference board print, which can often be a bit of a better guide than the headline. You know, so they're on the decline as well. So pointing in a relatively pointing towards a slower consumer in the US.
Yeah, and yet on the business side, so US durable goods orders, a big jump back from a fall of 6.9% in January to a rise of 1.4% in February. I mean, that's still down over the last few months. We can't get too excited about it, I guess.
Yeah, and that number was probably the one sort of bright spot in terms of what did move in interest rate markets, at least overnight, that you did get a bit of a bounce in Treasury yields off the back of that. I mean, it was a night of narrow ranges, but still probably amongst the US data that came out around that time, but the only thing that would have driven a 2 or 3 point sell-off in Treasuries. So the orders above consensus, even if you sort of strip that out to X transportation, which is obviously quite important for that index, then that's above consensus as well. So pretty strong across the board. I guess what's being asked more generally, though, is the broader business investment environment, which is still less clear that there's dramatic strength going on there as we get through the tail end of the stimulus that's been provided by some of the fiscal packages over the course of the past couple of years in the US, the CHIPS Act and the IRA. So with that fading, business investment is clearly slowing a little bit at the margin as well, but a bit of a bright spot there in the short term.
And we had falls in the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index and the Dallas Fed Services Index as well. But as we say, these numbers are pretty volatile. But just adding all of these together, just the picture is from those regional surveys isn't great, is it? And quite a few bond auctions overnight. There was a $67 billion sale of five-year notes in the US, a 5- and 10-year bond auction in Germany, a 5-year gilt auction in the UK. Not massive moves in yields as a result in any of those, though, was there?
No, the US Treasury one is the one I've looked at most closely. And, yeah, that cleared through market, as we say. So investors accepting a lower yield there than was prevailing in the market beforehand. That has helped trigger sort of a continuation of Treasury yields falling sort of late in the session. So quite a strong demand there, and also a strong demand from the indirect bidders, which is those who are typically associated with sort of offshore official money. Very strong interest there as well. So overall, a pretty good strong result there for the Treasury auction, sort of pointing once again to sort of our broad thesis that with Treasuries up towards 4.3%, at least in the current conditions, demand is pretty robust to fixed income. And from what I've briefly seen of those other auctions, you've mentioned that the gilts one in particular, their demand, they're pretty reasonable as well, even with some sort of bearish sentiment injected into the market briefly there by Catherine Mann of the BOE.
Yeah, so she's been sort of like watering down her opinion a little bit, hasn't she, lately? I'm not voting for a rate hike anymore, but it was a close run thing.
Yeah, she gave a bit of a better outline of why she flipped from voting for hikes to voting for unchanged at the previous meeting. And I think she sort of did stress there that she felt the market was still pricing too many rate cuts from here, but also said that one of the reasons she doesn't need to vote for a cut is because the market's doing the work for her. So a similar dynamic to what we've seen in the US, where the fall in yields that has happened already is reducing the marginal mortgage rate enough that she's seeing enough easing coming through just from repricing without having to actually actively do much. And that did cause gilt yields a bit higher briefly.
Now, Caroline Rogers from the Bank of Canada, clearly worried about productivity. She said it is the way to inoculate the country against inflation, but they are still where they were in terms of productivity, where they were 7 years ago. And here's the quote that I think had bulls scurrying for cover. She said, "I want to talk about Canada's longstanding poor record on productivity and show you just how big the problem is. You've seen those signs saying, in an emergency, break glass. Well, it's time to break the glass." I mean, that's pretty forthright, isn't it?
Yeah, quite sort of pointed comments there to some extent. I think that a couple of things she focused on in particular were the the Canadian competition environment, pointed that as being a factor as to why Canadian productivity has been relatively stable. And by that, she means lack of competition within the business sector that's sort of disincentivized or given no incentive for greater productivity investment, and also citing and probably quite quite closely related is a lack of capital deepening, or just lack of investment in capital. And once again, that probably comes back to the she'd probably link that back to a low competitive environment as well. I mean, that didn't do much for Canadian bond yields or anything in particular overnight. But as part of the longer run discussion that nearly every central bank is starting to have, you know, particularly with in Australia, for example, the RBA has some pretty punchy assumptions about where productivity is going to bounce back to post pandemic, including they'll be much higher than immediately prior. BOC there is raising the alarm that in Canada, at least, that's not looking to be the case so far, but it is early days for productivity.
Hard to get productivity up without investment, isn't it, really? You can't really sort of lash the workforce and tell them to work harder. You've got to pump in some more mechanisation.
Especially in a services economy, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. So look, consumer confidence numbers yesterday for Australia, well, they fell, didn't they? Presumably because of this realisation that rates are going to stay higher for longer. And we get CPI today. And from what I gather, these monthly surveys, some are more useful than others. So where does this one stand?
This one is probably, from the CPI, firstly, this probably is amongst the more useful. So this is the, this CPI refers back to, refers to February. There's better coverage of services in that number. So, yeah, we've got, our favourite friend of the podcast, Taylor, is our CPI forecasting expert. He's picking 3.6 for the headline number today. We're actually a touch higher than market on that. So one factor that we've got in there that's pushing us a little bit above market is that we do have travel expenses failing to fall back, you know, quite as much. So some of those events during February, we sort of figure that might be keeping the February travel numbers up a little bit, so hence why we're sort of sitting a little bit higher. Either way, even if this does come in at 0.1 or 0.2 above market, we're not necessarily seeing too much dramatic on in terms of RBA implications from this.
No, and much to read from those confidence numbers. I think
the interesting bit about linking it back to the RBA is not necessarily that it was that it seems to be outright rate cut or not expectations that are driving the consumer confidence numbers, but looking at the way that the survey is split around the RBA period to sort of just try and give a bit of help on this. But from our breakdown, it would seem that actually that the bigger factor was actually whether you were renting or had a mortgage. So your actual response to the survey didn't actually change too much over the RBA meeting. If you had if you owned your house or had a mortgage on your house, you were relatively, you were feeling relatively more confident anyway, and that didn't change much over the RBA meeting. If you were renting, you felt relatively less confident, and that didn't change much over the RBA meeting either. So that was a particularly interesting outcome there, I think. But certainly it was a pretty broad-based decline. And I mean, something that that we, or Tappers in particular, always encourages us to look at is where is questions on news recall, which we get in the survey periodically. That's showing that people's mentions or people's recall of mention of inflation in the news is actually falling pretty dramatically. So sort of closing that wedge back towards rates. And that's been interesting through this tightening cycle, that it hasn't been interest rate stories that people have worried about. It's been inflation. And with goods prices in particular, the stuff you buy frequently, with price changes there starting to ease off, that's a notable change, that people aren't sort of thinking so much about inflation anymore. Having said that, of course, the headline index was still down.
I was going to say that would be an argument for why confidence would be rising. But anyway, we'll see what the next one brings. Meanwhile, hey, we've got another central bank. We've got the Riksbank. They last lifted in September, so 6 meetings now at 4%. When will they cut? Before the ECB? Presumably, I mean, they're close to Europe, so they'd be concerned about what the krona does, wouldn't they, in comparison with the euro, if they move too much out of kilter.
Yeah, probably is a factor in their decision. I think the broad consensus, though, is for them to stay on hold tonight. No surprises like we got out of the SMB last week expected there, but it was expected. It wouldn't be a surprise, would it?
No, exactly. There we are. So it might be a surprise, and we're not expecting a surprise, is what you're saying. But why would we? Yes, thank you for that. New Zealand consumer confidence today, and the government's budget policy statement as well, which includes new forecasts with the expectation that there will be more government borrowing in New Zealand. Well, same story in many parts of the world, of course.
Yeah, certainly the trend in New Zealand in terms of government financing, very, very different from Australia. just by virtue of the RBNZ's rapid policy tightening starting to slow off the economy over there quicker. So that will be that will be sort of keenly watched. Debt markets getting a little bit more sensitive over there to levels of debt. Global rates coming down is starting to help that, but still, it's going to be interesting to watch to see whether there's a change to those potential changes to debt issuance going forward.
Just check the clock. We've got to get off now. Good to talk to you, and we'll catch you again soon. Have a great day.
Cheers. Thanks, Phil.
And tomorrow, because it's a long weekend coming up, we've got two editions of the Morning Call tomorrow. We've got our regular weekday morning edition, and then Bronwyn Curtis will be joining me in the afternoon to give her views on where we are in monetary policy around the world right now. So that's the long weekend edition coming a day early tomorrow afternoon. That's it for now. See you tomorrow morning.